Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for All About Android is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This episode of All About Android is brought to you by Ford, featuring the My Ford mobile smartphone app for electric vehicles. The My Ford mobile app makes the electric driving experience fun and efficient. Learn more about Ford electric vehicle technologies at Ford.com/technology.
Welcome to All About Android, episode 69, recorded on Tuesday, July 24th, 2012. This is your weekly source for all the latest news, hardware, and apps for the Android faithful. I'm Eileen Rivera.
I'm Jason Howell.
And I'm Ron Richards.
Where are you, Ron?
Oh, you're at home. I wanted to be there today, but I've got a flight like immediately after the show, so I couldn't make it back down to San Francisco in time. So I'm stuck in my living room.
Yeah. Nice.
It's a very nice living room. We approve. Yeah. You could use a little... Could use
Android.
A little green.
Yeah, but, like,
you know,
right there on the corner there, a little Android. Yeah, something. But I know you just moved, so it's all good.
Yeah, you haven't put up your Android decals yet. We understand.
Yeah, no, I haven't done the Android wallpaper is going up actually when I get back from this trip.
So. Okay, good. I'm happy that's in the cards.
Next time you Skype in, if you're not up here at the Brick House, then we'll see little decorations.
We'll see Ron represent.
And I'm sure you're using your color app to... decorate.
Yeah, the color palettes. Yes, exactly.
I just remember that because I just read an email. Somebody said, what was that color app? It was called Color Palette.
That's it. That's it. That's the app.
So there you go, listener. Thank you. All right. Well, we're going to be talking a little bit about earnings. It's earnings week for a lot of companies. Much, but, you know, we'll talk a little bit about that. And then more on the Nexus 7, quite a lot. And then the Nexus Q, too. You have a lot of things to say about that, don't you?
Well, I have a lot of things to say in my review, and we don't have to play the whole thing, but we can talk about it a little bit.
I cannot wait to hear this.
All I read was the most frustrating review I've ever done.
It was a challenge.
Okay.
I'll just say that.
I have to admit it. It's sitting in my living room, and I touched it once, and I haven't used it again.
Yeah.
So, other devices, other set-top boxes, getting plenty of use from me, but that Nexus Q,
not
so much.
It's not a set-top box. That's
no, I understand that, but I mean, I can listen to my music on those other devices. I can watch movies on those other devices. I don't get the nifty screensaver though. The wavy screensaver.
Because that's what we are all jonesing for is a screensaver.
Whatever. I'm not going to get into it.
$300 screensaver.
Oh, volume knob, too.
Yeah, the volume knob.
Yeah. All right. We'll
bounce that ball around here.
We will save our Nexus Q comments in just a little bit. But before we do that, let's jump into our news. So just really quick, God, we're really light on Android news this week.
It's kind of been that way since I.O. Like, it was kind of like there was a newsgasm around I.O. and then it was done.
And people are on vacation, probably. All the Android people taking some time off I don't know.
It's the summer slowdown. Everybody's kind of they're taking vacations. They're doing that sort of thing. So not a lot's going to happen. So that's all right.
Right. Mm-hmm. But Google still had to announce their Q2 earnings, and that happened yesterday. Curiously, Larry Page has no voice, so he is not on the call. But apparently they are up 21%. Over the last year, and there was a little bit of revenue reported on the Motorola revenue side. Hardware and other, they were listed at $1.2 billion, with $843 million coming from the mobile side and $407 million come from the home side. So not much to detail other than seems like there's still some growth here. Mm-hmm. And that's good news, right?
Yeah. I mean, they're not going down. I really have not a whole lot to say about this other than, you're still doing good. Great.
All right. I mean, obviously, it would have been even more panic if it was the other way around. So it's just sort of, here's the report.
Totally.
And everything seems to be okay, and growth is still happening. So we're focusing on the next quarter, right?
The two things that you want to look for coming out of our earnings call is either like, oh my God, the sky is falling, and that's not happening. And then the other thing you want to look for is the insane, you know, up, you know, craziness and dominance, market dominance. And while that's cool and that's what, you know, kind of very Apple-y to talk about, you know, steady growth is almost better for a company, especially a public company, to show in how they're showing. So I think this is good news. So.
Yeah, I take away good news as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So I'm sure their shareholders do as well.
So, it's like, phew, all right.
Yeah, but some possible not good news coming out of HTC. You might remember HTC put a fairly substantial investment into the whole Beats line of audio equipment, and that, you know, that was founded by Dr. Dre and Jimmy Iovine. They put in $300 million, or at least Dr. Dre and Jimmy Iovine sold $300 million a stake in the company. They sold 50.1% of the company to HTC. And this past weekend, HTC revealed that they are selling half of that stake back for $150
million.
So basically, HTC is really, you know, in the time since they've taken control of Beats, they've seen, you know, a management shakeup. They've seen market share, you know, getting smaller and their stock price dropping. And basically, they don't really believe Beats really lived up to the financial expectations they had. So they're giving half of it back.
It's very interesting to me. Like, I've never been too caught up in the Beats thing. Like, yeah. I knew of it, but I'd never really experienced it before the HTC deal happened. But I did know that it had a pretty good reputation with, you know, people who wanted, you know, I guess it would be contested whether it's true audio necessarily. I don't think it really is like an audiophiles type of technology, but it improves or enhances audio, and people seem pretty happy with that. The fact that it's tied into HTC and they're so quickly kind of going backwards with it, like, it really did. I mean, any of the devices that I use that had Beats on it, it was very hard for me to really kind of figure out exactly why it was there, like why that made sense.
What I think is happening here is that I think that being tied, having HTC own 50.1% of the company and control Beats, basically limited Beats to only being an HTC products.
Good point.
So, and now with all the crap that's happening in HTC, they're like, you know, we're really not expanding as big as we thought we were. Beats isn't expanding as well, because if HTC does well, then Beats does well. HTC is not doing well or isn't doing as well as they thought they would. So therefore, Beats isn't doing as well as they thought they would. So by giving 25% of the company back to Dr. Dre and Jimmy Iovine, now Beats is the majority shareholder in that company, and they can go spread Beats to other, I assume, to other products beyond HTC, and therefore Beats can grow as a product. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
I mean, yeah, like, that makes sense. It makes total sense.
Yeah, it's almost as if the 50% worked against Beats in this way because it limited where it could be. So
I feel like I've been doing a little Android in the wild with the Beats headsets, because every time I see them every once in a while, I saw one this morning and I thought, and then immediately was trying to follow the pink cord and what phone does that person have? He had it in his pocket, so I couldn't really see. But I do the, like, anytime I see the Fire or any, you know, rare Android device, I did the little, somebody's wearing the headphones. Mm-hmm. And I see them here and there.
Yeah,
not too much, but I do see them. So
Beats integrated in HTC handsets kind of seemed at first to be like, oh well, maybe that will make HTC more of a music focused kind
of want.
Brand.
Yeah,
really. I mean, I don't know if it was a marketing failure or what, or just an experience failure. In the time that I played around with Beats, really, it just seemed like an EQ. It seemed like somebody could just, you know, have an EQ.
Yeah.
App as part of their phone, and, you know, do the bass, the loudness enhance or whatever, have a different EQ curve, and you achieve the same thing. I don't really know exactly what else it really is when you're building it into a phone. So
I mean, I did like what I heard versus, you know, other phones without it.
Yeah,
you know, I
didn't really notice much of a difference. It just
really,
it was just
I
an
did.
EQ curve.
I know, but I sometimes I have my phones and I'm like, God, I wish I could hear a little bit louder and bassier, and
I've actually never listened to music through Beats, so I haven't been able to make that explanation. But I'm half deaf, so I've just given up. So that's all it is.
I should just mention real quick an app that I featured in the arena months ago, Volume Plus. It was an app that, you know, improves the amount of volume that you can get out of your speaker and through headphones and stuff. It has EQ curves in there. Mm-hmm. So, and it actually has a Beats emulation EQ curve. Who knows how it compares to the real thing? I honestly have no idea. I haven't compared them side by side. But there, I guess my point is, there are other ways to do similar things why is Beats so special? You know what I mean?
I think Beats is so special because whether you want to believe it or not, I don't know anything about the technology, so I'm speaking completely uninformed. So that's my disclaimer. But it's got a pretty good logo. It's got some good design.
and the headphones are really big.
It's got some heavyweight people behind it,
yeah.
Right?
It's
got Dr. Dre. You know what I mean?
Marketing.
And it's got a lot of celebrity kind of aspect to it. Because the average person, I mean, keep in mind how many people, and probably not in the chat room and probably not us. I know, not us.
Exactly. But
how many people go to Best Buy and plop down $80 for a Monster cable?
Yeah, no, it's the Monster cable is the perfect kind of analog to kind of Beats and what it means in the grand scheme of things. So
yeah,
it's a really good point. All right. Well, we would like to welcome to the show Alan Tsai. He works with Ekata Systems, and he developed an app that I had on the show weeks ago. It seemed like a long time ago because the demo didn't go very well. Tapestry. Alan, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Jason. Thanks for having me. Hi, Eileen. Hi, Ron.
Hi, Alan. Nice to meet you.
Hey, welcome.
Yeah, it's good to have you on. So when I was at I.O., I was kind of, you know, wandering through the sea of apps and everything that was kind of offered there. And it definitely, Tapestry kind of caught my eye. It's kind of has a very specific use case, I would say. But it's very interesting in how it approaches it. Could you just kind of give us, I don't know, if you had an elevator pitch on Tapestry, what it is in your words?
Yeah, so if we could take a small step back, over the last couple of years, we've seen a tremendous shift of what social means from the physical world to the digital world. And through this digitization process, the act of being social has been very diluted. And because of this, Ekata Systems really believe that the mobile social experience should be one that is more personal and more engaging. And to that end, we're building proximity-based apps that we hope to facilitate more real-life, more meaningful interactions. The first instantiation of that vision is the app called Tapestry, which is really a photo show and tell that allows you to share pictures and images with people close to you, close being a double entendre, with friends and family that you really care about, that you trust, and also from a proximity standpoint.
How close do people have to be for this to work? They have to be in the same room, obviously.
Yeah. We leverage a technology called Wi-Fi Direct, so you the Wi-Fi radio in your device. The range of that radio varies slightly between manufacturers, but typically indoor range is anywhere from 20, maybe 30 meters, outdoor a little bit further. But the point of the app is so people can congregate in a relatively small field of interaction. So actually, I would have preferred this not even to work outside of the room, but it's meant to be in a more closed and comfortable scenario.
I see. So that you can have a little bit more control around it. I was just kind of taken by the fact that you could do something on one device and then watch it affect all of the other devices that are connected to it. Why don't we just try? I'm going to see if I can do this a little bit better this time. This is the Tapestry app. I have some of my images on my Nexus 7 selected. So I'll hit curate. And essentially, this is going to launch into my curator mode.
Those people.
I don't know who those people are. So on my Galaxy Nexus, I'll go ahead and go into Tapestry. There's a button up here that essentially takes me to view mode. And that should, there's an invitation to connect that pops up on the 7. I accept it. And soon enough, my Galaxy Nexus should swap over. And let's see here.
Mine did.
So that was from you. That was from your device, Eileen. Interesting. Okay, so you already have it. Now I'm trying to get my Galaxy Nexus to connect here, too. It looks like it's in the process of doing that. And then you also have your Nexus 7, which you could request to do that as well. But essentially what this allows is, as you can see on Eileen's screen, I'm switching it on my Nexus 7 right now.
And I'm getting...
And then I can also, you know, pinch to zoom to go in. I can pinch to zoom, do all that. I'm having a hard time on this one. I saw my Galaxy Nexus, your new kind of alert feature that told me that I had Wi-Fi enabled, that I had turned that off.
It could be enabled, just not connected for now.
Okay, and now I'm connecting. Looks like you're connecting to your Nexus 7.
There it is.
7.
No, I've got
okay,
both.
So now I'm controlling it for both of your devices. Which, yeah, if you take a look at Eileen's device, entirely. I'm swapping and controlling, zooming in, zooming out. This is really cool. It's kind of empowering to be able to show you if this were, you know, my trip to the Bahamas or whatever, or my trip, our trip to Google I.O., that I could do whatever I wanted with these images, and you're all seeing it on your device.
Boy, I really need a haircut.
So, Eileen, if you swipe the download, you do a swipe gesture on any of the devices, you should see that it would download the image directly to your phone.
Swipe. What's the
up
swipe?
Or down, I
up
think.
Or down?
Down.
Down. Image saved.
And then that saves it to your gallery.
Yeah.
So image saved. There we go.
It goes over peer-to-peer, so not a single bit goes over the wide area network pipe. So saves you some bandwidth on your data plan.
Right. Oh,
okay. So it's very cool. As I've said, I really appreciate kind of the approach of this app, because it's something that I have not seen in the Android world. And first of all, is this something that you could do on iOS or on other platforms right now, or is this pretty limited to kind of the capabilities of Android at this point?
Yeah, so currently, because of the way it's working over Wi-Fi Direct, it's only available on Android. But that we're looking at ways to enable this user experience for more users on other platforms. So that's some things we have in the works. But for now, it is available only on Android, and which is why Google loved us and picked us to showcase that Google I.O.
Yeah, so was this an idea that you had before the feature was kind of touted in Jelly Bean? Because, I mean, in a sense, you kind of had early access in some ways to know that this technology was rolling out in a way that you could actually do what you need to do with the app, right?
Actually, even before the company formed, our vision and our the way we saw the world was the dilution of social. And really, the company was born out of this emotion, this idea that we should be doing something more meaningful. The technology really came along later. That was a great fit for what we needed to do. But we did not build a company based on knowing that Wi-Fi Direct was coming or not. I mean, given our previous, the founders and myself, our previous background and previous life, we had a hunch it was coming. So it was just a perfect aligning of the stars that kind of just happened for us.
That's really cool. I'm sure at this point you're probably tight-lipped about some things that you have kind of coming down the pipeline. I know I'm seeing some people in the chat room that are like, this is really, really cool. And now I just need to find a way to incorporate it and use it in my life. But I guess what wows me about this is that this could lead to other things, you know, other capabilities, apps similar to this that maybe have more of an immediate draw and more of an immediate place in somebody's repertoire. Like this is very cool. The fact that it only works on Jelly Bean, does the small amount of like compatible devices, does that make it easier or harder to quality control on your end?
I think obviously it's easier for quality control, but that means that we're only available on a very limited set of devices. So in a way, it's a good problem to have when you go you're able to go a little bit more broader. So we will encounter those problems as we grow and as we start to address other platforms.
Have you done much development on other platforms to know kind of the differences between what you're experiencing developing for Android and just developing for a cutting edge version of Android versus what it's like to develop for other platforms?
Not yet. Most of our efforts have been focused on Android. Mm-hmm. But as I mentioned, I think users can expect, and soon-to-be users can expect us to make it on other platforms. But for now, as of today, we have all our wood behind the Android.
Mm-hmm.
Will it ever be backwards compatible, or is it just Jelly Bean
and forward?
Yeah, it'll be Jelly Bean and forward. Astute users may know that Wi-Fi Direct is available in Ice Cream Sandwich. But there's a reason why the product is not productized on Ice Cream Sandwich. There's some issues with Wi-Fi Direct and the older distribution. So really, for it to be a user-friendly product, we really have to put a stake in the ground. It was a really tough decision because we have massive amounts of users on ICS compared to Jelly Bean. But the great news is we're seeing it over the last 2 weeks. And we know Galaxy Nexus supports Jelly Bean. It's a matter of time before the carriers approve that moving forward. HTC announced that all the One devices will support Jelly Bean moving forward, and I think it's a matter of time before the Galaxy S3s move from ICS to Jelly Bean. So I think there'll be a very sizable install base of Jelly Bean devices moving forward in the next 3 months or so.
Yeah, especially when you consider how well the S3 is selling right now, and that they do have Jelly Bean from what I've heard of what we've heard right around the corner for the most part. So it wouldn't be too long for you to have a much larger user base as far as that's concerned. When you're developing for Android, I mean, is there any sort of kind of thing that you've enjoyed most about your development experience for Android? And then, of course, I'll probably follow up with the thing you've enjoyed least. But how about what's been the kind of the most enjoyable part of it developing for Android so far?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question for us because we're new with Android development and we're first-time developers. So we can really speak to our, you know, virgin experience developing on the platform. And what I would say is there's not a lot of technical inertia to get the development set up going. With the tool chains are very well integrated using Clips. So it's for people who don't have a lot of experience just to get started. So that was a great point for us from the technical development side.
Mm-hmm. And what about the downside? Anything, any serious kind of hiccups or speed bumps that you've hit that you're like, man, I wish Google or folks behind Android would kind of get on this and improve this?
Yeah, I think generally speaking, the documentation used a little bit of polishing, and that we found that new features that are recently available takes a couple of iterations to bake before it's really productizable. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that could be unique to us because we're so bleeding edge, but we've also looked at, there's some other aspects of the features that we leveraged that were not as stable as we would have liked. And it takes some time before it's, again, fine-tuned. So maybe a little bit more rigorous testing on their end before releasing the framework and the SDK could help.
Sure. That's a really good point. Do you guys have any other questions for Alan?
No, this is fun. I like playing with it, actually.
Yeah, it's a really interesting app, and it's a lot of fun to have that power. You feel like you have a lot of power when you're using this app to show people your slideshow or your pictures or whatever.
Yeah, it's really just providing a synchronized experience and really making photo sharing an experience unto itself, as opposed to, I mean, all the photo sharing services. I don't want to name any names. You can post up on the internet, write comments, and tag people. But people view those features asynchronously. And it's actually, in my opinion, a very isolating experience. But in our case, we're creating an experience of photo sharing, and you're really telling a story of your photos, as opposed to, again, looking at a static image. And that's really the foundation of all the things that we would do had this remain beyond.
Absolutely. Well, Alan Tsai of Ekata Systems, we really appreciate you taking the time to come on the show and give us some more insight into your app Tapestry. Why don't you, especially for the audio listeners who don't get the lower third graphic, let people know where they can find more of your work.
Yeah, so check out our website, www.tapestry-app.com. You can also go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/tapestryapp. One key thing to note is there's a, for our website, there's a dash between Tapestry app. There's another very similar website out there that we couldn't get. So for our www URL, there's a dash between Tapestry app, and you can find our Facebook page from our homepage.
Excellent. Alan, thanks again so much for joining us. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, gang. Keep up the good work.
All right, so let's take a quick break and thank our sponsor for today's episode, Ford, featuring My Ford mobile smartphone app for electric vehicles. With the My Ford mobile app, you can do things like take advantage of value charging feature powered by Microsoft. That's based on your local utilities participation. It allows Ford customers to take advantage of off-peak and reduced rates for their utility without a complicated setup process. You can use go times to precondition your vehicle's temperature before your departure to conserve that battery energy. Monitor charging, get alerts, finding charging stations, planning out your drive. You can do all that stuff with this app. Share and learn smart driving tips in the forums, of course, very active forums on the MyFord mobile website with gaming features like leaderboards, unique achievements, and social networking. Monitor how far you drive, how much CO2 you're saving by not using gas. The MyFord mobile app makes the electric driving experience fun and efficient. You can do all these things with the app. So check it out. The 2012 Ford Focus Electric is available for purchase right now. And if you want to find out more information about all this stuff, all of Ford's electric vehicle technologies, you can find that at Ford.com/technology. And we thank Ford for their support of All About Android and the TWiT Network. Thank you, Ford. All right, let's get into hardware.
So going back to Android in the wild, uh-huh. A note the note, right?
The note.
I've kind of somewhat kind of eliminated that from the challenge or yeah, our ongoing I'd say, challenge.
Yeah, it doesn't really need
it's
to
been
be
spreading
in there.
Like wildfire. Yeah, is the safe thing to say. Yeah.
It's a hit. Let's just say congratulations, Samsung. It's a hit, but I will accept the Samsung Galaxy Note 10.1 with 2 gigs of RAM and phone messaging capabilities if you find one.
Okay.
And apparently that might be a part of the August 15th announcement that Samsung is going to have. And there's a picture here on the Verge of the Galaxy Note 10.1, a SPEN, an S Note, 1.4 gigahertz quad-core CPU. So, and it's white. I like that.
I have to imagine it's running Ice Cream Sandwich.
Yeah.
You gotta assume
probably
that.
There's not much more information we have here, but the Brave Post claims to have gotten their hands on it, and this is where The Verge is citing. So what do you guys think? 10.1 note.
Will this pass the back pocket test, Ron?
10 inches a bit. I think it's too big. Honestly, I think. I mean, I it's been noted to me that I do have large back pockets for some reason. I don't really know. But I think 10 inches might be too big.
It might be too big. I think, there's no pricing or anything yet. We'll probably hear more about it. My guess is on this August 15th event. Yeah. But. This is another entry into Android in the wild.
There we go.
Whenever it is
early
released.
Days for the 10.1 Galaxy Note. Yes.
What I like is setting the parameters. Like, it's got to be a Galaxy Note 10.1 with 2 gig of RAM. So you have to not only get a picture, but then ask them, how much RAM is in that?
Yeah. Can you open up the About Device info page? And can I see that? It's really important.
Along the same line, staying with Samsung right now, they have just reported that they have sold 10 million Galaxy S3s. Hey, wow. Congratulations.
Is that a success?
That is a success to them. Yes, 10 million units.
That's a lot of devices in a short amount of time.
Yeah, a month or 2 months, actually. So the company does consider that a success. Gosh, I can't say that word.
Yeah, believe me, I understand. I'm having real problems saying stuff.
And so, and then staying along the tablet line, Staples president I did read this earlier today, that he kind of let the cat out of the bag about possible 10-inch Amazon tablet that we talked about. We talked about all the various possible sizes last week, I think. I went through the whole rundown.
Yeah, it's kind of no new news or new rumorish news necessarily, but...
But the fact that the president of Staples is, you know, talking about various or 6 tablet SKUs and differing sizes and a 10-inch model, again, probably won't pass the back pocket test, Ron. But all of those rumors that we had read previously in one of our earlier episodes seems like it will be true.
I mean, as we're getting into back to school and then we're getting, before you know it, we're going to be in holidays. And I mean, from the moment the Kindle Fire came out, what did I say? I said they're going to do a bigger one.
And it's been a year since the original Kindle Fire. It's time. So it's usually those year cycles, right?
Yeah.
But man, if they come out with 5 different devices.
Well, you know, it's probably going to be different variations, right? They're going to have their 7-inch with Wi-Fi only. They'll have their 7-inch with 3G. Network connectivity or connectability. 10-inch, same deal. So. I mean, well, that's what we would assume. It's not that they are, but we would think that they would be. So, I mean, this is what Amazon needs to do, especially after being so peeled back the first year and the amount of success that they had then. They kind of have to up the ante.
Yeah.
And they want to take advantage of that kind of momentum.
I think we always knew. It was sort of like we looked at that fire and I, you know, even from that point on had thought, this is going to get better. It's not great, but it's going to get better.
But this is a good starting point.
You know what I think is so funny about that, though, is that why did you say that? Is it because of the hardware or because of the Amazon ecosystem?
I think it's because of, no, not the ecosystem. I thought it was their forked version of Android.
Right, that's what I meant by the ecosystem. Okay. By the skin, by the Amazon skin.
Yeah, the skin. I just thought it was so elementary and
because so now if the, now okay, let's play devil's not okay. devil's advocate, but let's fantasy land. Okay. If last year the Kindle Fire came out and it was powered by Asus and it was the Nexus 7. So the device was the Nexus 7. Mm-hmm. Would you still feel that way?
Oh. No, I mean, this. We love this device, right?
You mean if it was the Nexus 7 with that Amazon's overlay?
If Amazon made a deal with Asus and the Kindle Fire was on the same piece of hardware that is the Nexus 7.
Yeah.
So you got, here's my Nexus 7. And when I turn it on, it's the Kindle Fire. It's the Amazon whole thing.
Oh.
You see?
I see where you're going.
Not once since this has come out have we been like, yeah, this is all right, but I can't wait for that 10-inch.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Right. I see where you're going with that. For me, the big downside for the Kindle Fire was always the overlay. But you know, that's me. Like I'm close enough to these things to understand, to actually know Android enough to know that there is such a thing as, you know, a vanilla version of Android. A lot of people don't. A lot of people actually that got the Kindle Fire don't know that and wouldn't have known the difference. Absolutely. If I would have got this and it would have had Amazon's overlay, I still would have been kind of meh about it. Not thinking about the fact that, oh, well, I guess you could root it and put whatever you want on there. You can kind of always do that for the most part. But out of the box, absolutely.
Yeah, I don't know. I just find it interesting how we kind of look at the Kindle Fire, not that it's a failure, because I don't think it's a failure at all, but I feel like it kind of gets a bum rap, whereas the Nexus 7 is almost like a runaway hit.
Yeah.
You know, so I think it's just interesting how much does the hardware play in a role of it versus the software overlay and Amazon kind of setting up that kind of wall that they did in the stupid ships and all that stuff. You know?
Well, yeah. It also only has 8 gigs of internal. So, you know, I know that you could watch things on cloud or whatever, but then let's just get into the fact that the 16 gig Nexus 7 is the one that's been selling out and they can't keep that one on stock apparently versus the 8 gig. I think people out there are more like me who want more storage space. And so that was one thing that I did not like about the Kindle Fire, hardware-wise, I guess.
Right. That's a good segue into one of our next news stories, which is that Google has stopped taking orders for the Nexus 7 16-gig version. And we don't really know why, although the question is, did they simply not make enough?
I feel like that's true.
And, you know, so what I would be interested in, I don't have enough time to do these sort of things, but I would be curious to look at the sales numbers of like iPads to see how the 16, 32, 64 gig work, because the argument that you just posited, Eileen, that people are digital hoarders and they want more of their files. They want bigger storage capacity on their devices. And are we culturally not ready to embrace the cloud as much? I'm curious how that applies to other devices, and whether or not it's a cultural problem or a supply chain problem.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure because I've been fine with the 8 gig. I'm cloud streaming. I'm fine. I'm totally. Yeah. I've become a transitory digital file. Like I have been putting video on this to watch, like on the BART and stuff like that. But I put a file on at a time and I delete it when I'm done. Like, I'm not keeping a library on here at all. There's no library on this device. Mm-hmm. I'm just using all Google Play and all that sort of stuff, and Netflix and Hulu and all that sort of stuff. But maybe people want more storage space. I don't know.
Yeah, like, I wonder when it came down to, you know, manufacturing their initial run of these tablets, did they make equal amount 8 and 16 gig devices? And, I mean, you know, since the Nexus 7 pricing was announced and the two models and all of that kind of hit, that, you know, one of the very first things I heard was you would not be advised to get anything less than the 16 gig because it's only $50 more. Mm-hmm. It's twice as much storage and you can't change it after the fact. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure a lot of people have kind of followed down that line of thinking, saying, you know, and that would possibly account for it. Having said that, like you said, Ron, like, you know, this Nexus 7 has 8 gigs of storage on it. And in my use, like, I don't store my files on there. I haven't stored my files. Now it's my wife's, but I was, you know, I was just streaming.
I'm always the only one who'd wants more in the table, but
I understand the value of it.
I just think also if they would have sold a 32 gig, that would have actually, they would have done really well with that as well.
Yeah. But if they sold a 32 gig, it would have been $299 and then they would have had a $300 device they didn't want. Yeah. So, but that said, it looks as if the marketing engine is starting to rev up, and actually Google rolled out a Nexus 7 commercial.
Oh, which, yeah, let's watch it.
Yeah.
I actually enjoyed watching this. I thought it was cute. For those on the audio stream, it's a dad and son in the woods, and they're camping, and they're using the Nexus 7 in the wild, literally.
Oh,
they're,
aww,
you know,
roasting hot dogs, yeah, using it as a nightlight.
Where are they getting this Wi-Fi? They must books. Have a Mi-Fi.
Yeah, right.
This part is cute because they're playing checkers.
When do they have time to charge up this tablet?
Where do they charge it?
Yeah. The charge on it actually has been pretty good.
Yeah, it is good.
Yeah, it's pretty decent.
Watching the Lorax.
And then, of course, you've been asking yourself, how on earth do they get all this data connectivity?
Yes.
And you realize that they are in a tent that's out in their backyard at their house. The first time I saw this, I actually felt a little... I felt like it was a little bit deceptive in the beginning, yeah, even though they tell you in the end. They do show you in the end. But for the casual viewer that happens to see a part of it, like, mm-hmm, it almost makes it seem like there is a data connection with it or something. I don't know. The first time I saw it, I was like, wait a minute. Why are you doing that? Like, that it can't do that.
Got it.
And
yeah,
then, you know, sure enough, they tell you.
I had that same thought, too. But then I was like, well, they could load the movie on locally, and they have the Checkers app, and they downloaded the book. Like,
I figured.
Yeah, totally.
I figured they had a Mi-Fi. I was like, he must have a Mi-Fi. They just don't show
it. But could you imagine, like, Nexus 7 marketing campaign revolves around using also a Mi-Fi?
And literally, a Mi-Fi won't last that long. It won't last that long. So
yeah, totally. Man, if they're doing that, if they were doing that, Google needs to work on their marketing. Thankfully, they're not.
I just finished watching that commercial, then I'm like, oh, I want a kid. It's a completely different message for me. So yeah.
Wow.
Well, I haven't let my daughter use the Nexus 7 yet, because once she realizes that it exists, that's all she's going to want to do. So the longer she doesn't know it exists, the better. I'm also going to have to hide this from her. This is the Asus Transformer Pad Infinity that I'm going to be reviewing for Before You Buy. Here it is. Actually, because we can, here, I'll open it. Because this is just always so much fun to do for the very first time. You've got the plastic on there, so I'll go ahead and peel it off and you can live through me. Oh, it's so much fun peeling off plastic. It's the little things that I enjoy. So there we go. The Asus Pad Transformer, or the Asus Transformer Pad Infinity. I told you I'm high on cold medicine, right? Yes, I'm very excited to play around with this. It also has the dock, the mobile dock. I finally get to spend my time with a Transformer. So I'm looking forward to it.
I think you'll like it. But
yeah, you really liked the Transformer.
The Transformer Pad. I like them all. Maybe I just love Asus, but I like this. Yeah. I liked all those Asus tablets that I used, and this one I've played around with it a little bit. It's decent. I just feel like they are constantly making up for past issues. GPS, Wi-Fi issues, and trying to get it right. And I think they did with this. But there's nothing to me that sings out like, oh my God, it's so much more amazing than... Maybe you'll think differently. I don't know.
I don't know. I do know what you mean, though, that they're coming out with, iteration after iteration of Transformer Pad.
Monthly.
So it's kind of like starting to get a little confusing as far as like, well, why this one versus that one?
And this one's the higher cost one, but admittedly so, it's going to be better with gaming and whatnot. But the one that was out with the different colors, the blue and the red and the whatever.
The champagne.
Yeah. Loved it. I mean, and it was cheaper. It was like $3.99. So,
I like the idea. I like the idea that there's a manufacturer out there rolling things out monthly.
I feel like it. Actually, both came out at the same time, right? Because the Infinity Pad. So maybe it's like bi-monthly, but like more than one.
Yeah.
More than meets the eye.
Did I see a dock there as well? The keyboard dock?
Yeah, the dock's there.
Yeah.
I got the dock right here.
They're such solid docks. Except for the first one that I had with the Prime. I didn't like the trackpad, but the second one I thought was really good.
Yeah, that's a big one for me. Yeah.
That brings up a completely off-topic question that I've had, which is, but now that I've been using my Nexus 7 more often, I really want to get a keyboard, like an external keyboard, but I just can't decide which one. So, I don't know.
Okay.
Maybe we can think about that for a few seconds.
Well, it has USB on the go, so you can connect something through that if you choose. And then, of course, I guess Bluetooth keyboard as well.
Yeah.
Found something, but...
All right. Should we move on to email?
Well, no. Actually, I have a little...
Oh, you have
Nexus
a mention.
Well,
oh,
I have that thing.
Duh! You went into your about to review this, and I thought that was it. I forgot. Duh,
yeah, no,
we have
no,
the big
I
news just, teased it too at the top of the show.
Yes, I did.
Right,
the Nexus Q. I spent my time with the Nexus Q, and Yeah, the review process is probably one of the more painful reviews I've ever done. Just primarily because I could get everything to work except the social playlist function. I could get that to work at home some of the time. I couldn't get it to work all the time. But here at the Twit Studios, no matter what I did, I couldn't get it to work. And it was so frustrating because how do you do a review of a device which it's in like Google's like subtitle of the device, the Nexus Q cloud, you know, social media player or something like that. Like it's in the name. So it's a huge part of what they're branding here. And I couldn't show it, but I left it in after trying for a few hours, trying everything that I could, including talking to some people that are closer to the production of the Q to try and like see if I had left out anything. And it was just a painful review to do. But it's going to be in this week's Before You Buy. So definitely check that out. I don't know. We all played around with the Q at this point and everything. Any thoughts?
I took it out of my box recently and went to put it in the stereo and it's not plugged in or hooked up to, you know, cause I was sitting there. I'm like, when am I going to use this? I have a Google TV. I don't need it.
Yeah. You know?
So
that's kind of where I'm at as well. I mean, I like the lights around it. I think it's pretty, but
That's not. Yeah, that's
not. It's
not
a, no. I mean, that has nothing to. No. Why would you pay for that? That's all. It's been hooked up to my television since I/O, and it just is now gathering dust.
It's just kind of pretty. It's a beauty.
It's an odd device. It would be a good party conversation. What's that?
How many parties do you throw, though?
None.
Right.
Exactly.
and how many parties do you throw that you know that the majority of people there have A, Android, B, have, I think, Jelly Bean right now. They say that it works on Gingerbread and Up, but I couldn't get Gingerbread devices to work. So
it didn't even work on Ice Cream Sandwich.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like Jelly Bean seems to be the limiter. I don't know if that's because we got an early preview of it and it hasn't been come out officially or something, but they still tout it on the website. Mm. I don't know. There's just a lot of asterisks to the Nexus Q, especially when you take a look at the fact that we talked about the Vizio CoStar on the show in the past, $99 Google TV box. That looks pretty slick. It's available for pre-order. Looks like August 14th is the date that's going to be hitting around. I mean, you just take a look at even the Google TV offerings, you know, compared to the Nexus Q, and you're just like, all right, $99. I get actually the things that I want to do with this type of device. So I don't know. I hope they improve functionality to it sometime, but I'm not holding my breath.
I think it'll do more, but it's just not there yet. So
yeah.
It's so perplexing. It's so perplexing. I just don't understand it. Oh, well.
Anyways, that's it. Let's check out an email.
All right. This is from David, who says, I want to know your thoughts on buying a Galaxy Nexus now. I prefer stock Android mostly for design purposes, and I want to stay with the Nexus brand. Should I invest in a Galaxy Nexus now, or will there be a new Nexus phone end of year? I would be buying an unlocked phone either way. Price is not an issue. Thanks, and keep up the show. I do believe that there will be another Nexus phone at the end of the year. They seem to be releasing one around December.
About every year. November,
December.
I saw this email and had to put it in because I was like, oh my gosh, it's already that time where we start thinking about what the next Nexus is going to be like. Oh,
when they gave us these, you know, at I/O, I thought, whoa, this is an old phone.
Right.
You know, I mean, really it is, but it's not old anymore because now we have Jelly Bean.
Right.
It's actually newer. I don't know. What do you guys think? I mean, I say definitely get an unlocked. Don't get a carrier version if you can. But it's like, how long can you wait, David? Can you wait till November? It's July, August, September, October, November. Okay, so 4, maybe 5 months. Can you wait that long and stick it out with your phone that you have now?
Yeah.
I mean, my opinion on it is that the phones, I'm on almost like an every other phone cycle.
Okay.
Even though I've had every Nexus, so what do I know? But I feel as if my kind of phone cycle is about, I don't even know now. Because what I've done, the precedence blows away what I was going to say. But I would say just get the Galaxy Nexus now and don't worry about the next one. And then the next one, get that one. but
I guess, yeah, time. I guess it really depends on how his current experience is. He mentioned he picked up a Nexus S. He was happy with it with ice cream sandwich, but now he's put Jelly Bean on there and he says, the graphical improvements have him hooked. Now he's hardly using his iPhone. He also has an iOS device and he's hardly using that as a result. So it's almost like, I guess it depends on how well Jelly Bean is working on your Nexus S, because you kind of end up with the best of both worlds potentially if it's good enough and you have Jelly Bean and that shows a marked improvement in your experience. Maybe that gets you through another 6 months.
That's
right?
What I'm
six
thinking.
Months isn't very long.
Yeah,
but I'm totally the kind of person to like wait and wait and wait because I think something's down the line. And we've learned in past episodes it's never usually the
you
best
got
idea.
Burned by the bionic last year.
Yeah.
You know what? I totally misread that. I just thought he was playing with an Nexus S. He has one. So I would maybe wager to wait.
Yeah, I'd almost say the same thing.
Get that new piece of hardware.
How
I don't know. I was on it. My old Nexus S is still right here. I was on the Nexus S, and I gotta admit, life after the Nexus S with the Galaxy Nexus is a lot better. It's a faster phone. It's a better piece of hardware. It's a better handset.
Yeah, but is there going to be buyer's remorse in November or December?
Well, if he says price is not an issue, is price not an issue in 6 months too?
All right, well then
that's
upgrade.
A really good point.
Yeah.
Actually, if price is not an issue,
then get the Nexus now, the Galaxy Nexus,
yeah,
and then upgrade when the new one comes out at the end of the year.
Sell it on Gazelle or something.
Yeah,
and there you go.
Are we totally misreading your email, David? Please let us know. So. I don't know.
I think. Well, I also like. You know, with Verizon, they've dropped the Galaxy Nexus down to $99. So suddenly the Galaxy Nexus is becoming, it's obviously the best $99 phone that you can get at this point. It's less expensive, but it's very enticing, right? It's like, well, do I do that or do I just wait 6 months and get the next big thing? Mm-hmm. You can always wait for the next big thing. And yes, that can burn you in the end. All right, let's get to, I think our apps section is actually really interesting this week. We've got some pretty cool stuff in there. Let's jump into apps. So a lot of you have a Nexus 7, I've heard. We do too. There are a number of ways that you can superpower your Nexus 7. I feel like that should be the title of this section. Superpower your Nexus 7. So here's a few things that you can do. These are things that you might want to do to your Nexus 7 that initially when you get it out of the box, you're like, this is really good, but I wish it played Flash. For instance, Adobe has announced that with Jelly Bean going forward, they will not support Flash moving forward. And actually, if you're on a Nexus 7, you can go to the Play Store on a Jelly Bean device and you're not going to see Flash come up there because Adobe's kind of blocking it from view from what I understand. But there is still a way. And I actually had this in a Twitter conversation over the weekend. And it's just kind of an interesting approach. I had recommended that you sideload the Flash APK, which you can get through a link that I'm going to add in the show notes, twit.tv/AAA69. That you sideload that and then use Dolphin HD, because I know in the past Dolphin HD allows Flash with the browser. But Dolphin HD, from what I just found, also is limiting Flash going forward with Jelly Bean. So you can't use that browser anymore to do this.
It's a conspiracy.
Yeah, I guess it kind of is. Firefox Beta, however, allows you to do that. If you want to use that, you can install that. I'm sure there are other browsers out there. But I guess the moral of the story is sideloading Flash is part of the process. The other part is actually getting a browser that still works with Flash. So it is possible. You're just not going to be able to use Chrome or, in this case, Dolphin HD, which... I don't know how many people are using Dolphin HD when Chrome's installed standard. But anyways, there's a way to get Flash in your Nexus 7. Adding if you want to actually add a camera launcher to your Nexus 7, that's another thing that people are like, well, it doesn't have a regular camera. It only has front-facing, but I still want the camera app. You can find in the Play Store, there is Camera Launcher for Nexus 7. It's a very small install, and it gives you your little camera icon. And when you launch it, it's the exact same camera app that you have on your phone or your tablet or whatever, including all those crazy googly, big eye, big mouth effects that you can do in video, which why wouldn't you want to have that if you could? Adding storage to your Nexus 7. This might be appealing to you, Eileen.
I need the storage.
If you have rooted your Nexus 7, there are a few ways that you can do this. Well, okay, yes. But it's very easy to root your Nexus 7, by the way. There's a lot of really, really easy methods on rooting. Okay. If you do that, you can use an app called Stick Mount. Uh-huh. And essentially what this does, it does require a root, of course, but it allows you to plug into the USB port and actually, you know, put like a USB device, storage device in there, run this app. You can also have this app detect when you've plugged in USB storage, and it allows you to do that. The out-of-the-box USB on the go that comes with the Nexus 7, from what I understand, does not support USB flash drives out of the box. But this is one way around that. So you've added storage to your Nexus 7. And finally, a lot of people have noted with the Nexus 7 that the UI for it, it represents more of the phone approach, right? The upright portrait approach versus what you see on the larger scale tablets like the 10.1, where it's more horizontal and all of your like information bar and stuff is down at the bottom. There is an XDA post that details how you can do this. Again, I think you need root in this case because you're actually modifying some stuff using the build prop editor or an editor of your choice. But you set the density of your display, of your device, to, I believe it's 170 from its current value. And that tricks it into giving you the landscape version that you're used to seeing on large devices. So if you have a Nexus 7, there's four different ways you can kind of bring new kind of dimension to it, things that you might have wanted that you didn't get right out of the box.
And really, I think this is like the second inning, or not even that, with the Nexus 7. I think you're going to see a lot more of these kind of things that are going to come out, that as people get more people get the device and more people have time to hack at it, I think you'll see more potential unlocked. So
yeah, unlocked features and stuff. I mean, I will say, though, you know, as far as the landscape versus portrait on the 7, I actually really like the portrait on the 7. I think it works really well for this size. It would be weird to have a 10.1 and have this kind of layout. But on the 7-inch, this actually makes a whole lot of sense for me to have a portrait versus the landscape layout. But some people prefer it the other way, so there are ways to get it.
Yeah, I haven't had a big problem. I thought I was going to have a problem with the lack of the landscape mode, or at least the flipping. I thought it would flip like a phone does, the phone doesn't flip, but you know, but so the larger tablets do flip. But I haven't balked at it for a moment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's really only weird, like using MX Video Player, because that flips to landscape mode. And so I do a lot of it. So like when you exit out, you've got to rotate back, but whatever. That's, you just adapt to it.
Right, right.
But I have full on adopted. I mean, I haven't, like, ever since I fully loaded this and started working with the Nexus 7, my iPad is collecting dust. I just haven't.
Interesting.
I've been bringing it to the gym. I've been watching video on it. I've been doing everything on it. I'm impressed that this device has really taken a hold in my daily use.
That's kind of what we've been waiting for, right? An Android tablet that really kind of has that power. Although I think it's definitely debatable to say that the Nexus 7 is on the same kind of necessary, like, level as the iPad. I'm sure you could kind of, you know, fight on both sides of that argument. But to hear that it's replacing the use of an iPad, and you're not the only one that I've heard say that. That says something, for sure.
Yeah, well, I mean, case in point. I mean, like, I was, you know, I had a bunch of video that I wanted to watch at the gym, and, it, you know, I just plugged the Nexus 7 in and was able to copy it over. MX Video Player plays any type of codec. If I was going to do it on the iPad, I'd have to run it through Handbrake and get it into MP4 format. And, all, you know, I have to jump through all these hoops. It's just, it's surprisingly, the Android device is easier for me to use than the Apple device.
Mm-hmm.
Which I find fascinating. I was a little worried about whether the smaller screen at the gym would be weird because I'm used to the iPad, but I have no problem. I have no problem with it whatsoever. It's been great.
Nice.
And I've been taking it on the Muni and on the BART and all that sort of stuff, and it travels well. I mean, it's really nice. I've totally gotten on board with Pocket now, and I'm totally using the Read It Later functionality, and I'm loading up stories and I'm reading it when I'm on the bus. It's great.
Awesome.
It needs, it's so much easier to carry a 7-inch device.
Yes, agreed.
My only issue is I have some games on the iPad that are not on Android yet. Mm-hmm. And I don't.
Yeah, I think that's one of Tom's complaints as well. Like,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah, I mean, that's the only thing. And also, I'm starting The Wire seasons 1 through 5. And
I'm jealous.
And I don't. It's not on Netflix. It's on HBO Go. And I just realized that HBO Go, while it has just been upgraded for ICS devices, is not yet for Jelly Bean. I was all ready to watch it on here.
So they blocked it for Jelly Bean.
Not. Well, it's just not ready for Jelly Bean yet. Oh, okay. It's just not ready for the jelly. So, that's my. I was like, oh, I'm just starting The Wire.
So wouldn't it work? I mean, wouldn't Jelly Bean be backwards compatible?
When I went to the app to download it, it said not compatible with your device.
Really?
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. I just want that and a few games. And I'm done. Yeah. I mean, if it just had that, then I'd be ready to go. Plus some better Twitter clients. But we won't get into that today.
I had no problem with the stock Twitter client, the standard Twitter.com.
It's fine. But there's just...
Oh, wow. How about that? I just looked up HBO Go. Your device isn't compatible with this version.
Yeah, see? I want that. I'm sure they'll fix that. They'll fix that. It's just not right now. And I'm getting into The Wire. So I would like to do that. So,
If you're looking for a game, you might want to look at some of the controversy around Madfinger Games with their game Dead Trigger.
Yeah. I had that in the arena a few weeks ago.
Yeah, you did. So recently they dropped the price from 99 cents to free, which angered a lot of users who paid for the game. And basically what they're explaining the price drop for is around piracy. And here's their statement, and I'll try to read it as best as I can through my congestion. The main reason, piracy rate on Android devices that was unbelievably high. At first, we intended to make this game available for as many people as possible. That's why it was as little as a buck. It was much less than $8 for Shadowgun.
True.
But on the other hand, we didn't dare to provide it for free since we hadn't gotten experience with free-to-play format so far. However, even for one buck, the piracy rate is so giant that we finally decided to provide Dead Trigger for free. Anyway, Dead Trigger is not freemium. It was always and still remains free-to-play. That means all players are able to play without in-app purchases. We stand up for the statement because all the members of our team are playing and enjoying Dead Trigger without in-app purchases. So it looks like piracy on Android is starting to take a bite into some of the gaming world, which I think is fascinating.
Yeah, it's kind of unfortunate. First of all, I dropped a buck on this app or this game. I have no problems with that. You can keep my dollar. It's okay. It's just a dollar. Who cares? But yeah, it's unfortunate that they had to do this. I am curious to know kind of where that information comes from, like how they've seen that. You know, did they just notice that it was on a lot of torrent sites, or did they actually see like a cause and effect in some way? I don't know how you track that.
Do they have some? They've got to have some sort of ping or some sort of like reach out to the some sort of registry, like when a new install happens, and if that number is way higher than the numbers they're getting from Google, then that's your gap. So
Yeah.
It's strange. But what's funny is that like a dollar, you know, like you just said it, 99 cents, you're not upset by the fact that they changed it to free. Like I never go back and look to see what the price is of an app or a game after I buy it.
No.
People are bad out of shape.
I mean, some people have issues with the fact that, you know, they bought it for one price and then, you know, it was less later. And so it's like, well, why didn't I get the change on that? I think you know, they kind of sum it up. They're changing it to free. So it's not like they're gaining a whole lot by doing that. I guess I understand that the price change, you know, angering some people. But I don't know. In my head, it was like, you know what? It's a buck. Whatever. Whatever. These apps are so inexpensive. Now, if everybody was doing this all the time, I guess that would be a different story. But I tend to believe what they're saying here.
But even then, isn't that just free enterprise? I mean, like I was shopping for a printer a couple of weeks ago. And
that's a very good point.
And it was $65, and it went up to $80, then it went down to $72. Like prices change. Like that's a very good point.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So
why wouldn't that be similar in the App Store? Maybe that's just how it's marketing. I don't know. What do you have, Eileen? I hear you have an app that you absolutely love. You too, Chad. You love this app too, right?
God. All right. So. I don't know how to start, but this is horrible. This is a horrible app. Word Lens is out for Android now, and I have the iOS version, and it works great. So when I saw this in the Androids, or in the Google Play Store, I got excited. I thought, oh, great. Oh, $4.99. Oh, okay, whatever. It's great. I know it works really great. And then I downloaded the app, and then I tried it, and it is really crappy, and I hope the developers fix it. And it seems like everyone across the board is having a really difficult time with this. So you get for $4.99. Okay, first of all, you could try it for free. Try the light version for free. Don't make the mistake like I did and thinking, oh, this works fine on that other platform. I'm sure it's fine here. So download, pay the $4.99. But I'm telling you, hold your money. Don't buy the $4.99. And don't even buy another language pack like I did. I went, I got Spanish and I was like, oh, I have a French email I wanted to, you know, translate. And yes, I can do it on Google Translate, but I wanted to try the app. Doesn't work. And I don't know if you can see this, Chad. I'm focusing. But essentially,
just
here we
so
go.
Like,
it's just kind of moving around too much. It's not. It's not. I'm doing English to Spanish. It doesn't hold. And then some of the words are not translated properly. It just doesn't work well. And you can back me up on this, right, Chad? It's not.
So,
they need to fix it.
Yeah. So I saw this and I was really excited. I thought this was going to be a blowaway arena app. I downloaded it, and I'm getting the exact same problem that you're having, where you'll see the words jump around and flip between other words, between different styles, and it does it so fast that it's unreadable.
It's totally unreadable. I see that it's trying, and I try and focus. I'm on you can see some Spanish words here, but it's just not, ugh. Save your money, folks. Save your money. Wait till we tell you it's good to... It's great technology, but it doesn't work on Android right now.
Yeah, and it's so
really
cool on iOS. I remember when I first saw that on iOS, I was like, man, that is a really cool... That's something I haven't seen before.
Yeah.
I saw this was on Android, and so I got the free version and played around with it. And like you, Chad, I was like, oh, this is such a lock for the arena. And I mean, just in the demo, you don't actually get... translation in the demo, you get things like reversing the text
exactly.
and stuff. And even just watching it was dancing around the text so much. You have to imagine that they're going to spend the time that they need to improve this.
And Mac Photo Guy 79 in the chat room is asking me if it's just because I'm showing it on an LCD display.
No.
I printed paper.
Yeah, no.
With
all
the
three
email,
of us have tried this and
printed,
it doesn't work.
I really tried well. Different emails, different fonts, different sizes. No,
yeah,
did not work.
Unfortunate.
So, I really hope they change it because I've already bought it now and I would really like for it to work because it's very cool once it actually does work. And that is WordLens. Don't get it.
Boom. Don't get
cautionary,
it yet.
A cautionary tale.
Yes.
Yeah, don't get
we
it yet.
We do it for you so you don't have to.
So I was, I put out a thing on Google Plus a little bit ago about SwiftKey 3. So it's a keyboard that I actually really like a lot. And we've talked about it on the show plenty of times. We had the developer on.
Mm-hmm.
But my complaint with alternate keyboards has always been, it's great that I can swap out the keyboard, but I'm always locked into voice input dependent on the keyboard. It's like the voice input and the keyboard are intrinsically locked. And there's no way for me to use Google's, I think, superior voice to text input if I'm using SwiftKey as my keyboard. Vance McAllister replied on there. He's a big fan of the show. And he kind of opened everybody on that thread's eyes to the workaround. This is something I had not seen before.
Cool.
So I can kind of show it to you and give him credit for that. I'll hold this up for you. So I'm going to go into my catch note here. And what you'll see immediately is that I have SwiftKey as my keyboard. Is this as far as it goes in?
No. Sorry, I was excited. I was making excited faces.
Oh, because you're happy about this.
I distracted
okay.
you. Sorry.
Okay. No worries. So this is my SwiftKey keyboard. I've got it set. If I go to video voice input, I'm going to get. Let's see here. I'm going to get SwiftKey's version of voice input if it actually comes up here. Hold on. Well, now it's okay. So SwiftKey voice input, and this is actually SwiftKey's version of it. Stop. Stop so that it detects it, and it gives me my options later. Man, it's going really slow right now. Maybe this is one reason why I don't want to use SwiftKey voice input. So, okay, so I've got the SwiftKey keyboard. If I actually want to use Google's voice input instead, pull down from the top and choose input method, select that, Google voice typing. And now I have Google's voice input happening while my SwiftKey keyboard is still set as my default keyboard. Isn't that cool? I was so stoked to see this because it's like the best of both worlds. It's too bad that you kind of have to do a workaround to do it, but it's nice to know that you can. Vance McAllister, thank you so much for that. That was that's a fantastic tip that I think a lot of people are going to appreciate because yeah. I'm sure that we're not the only ones that wish that there was some sort of separation. I know that the SwiftKey folks are trying to work with Google to figure out how you separate the two. So
we've given you an alternative to use Google Voice. We've given you Flashback on Nexus 7. I'm saving you money on a language app.
You're welcome.
We're rocking tonight.
Good job.
And now we're giving you a reason to install three new apps in a little segment we like to call the Android Arena.
Two enter, one lives. Android Arena.
So are we agreed that after last week's arena that we're done with Chad being in the arena?
Yeah, Chad, you can't do this anymore, man.
Yeah, are we done? Chad's out?
I was too good for school.
Oh, yeah.
Chad,
you should stop at a high note, buddy. Stop at a high note.
It's really too bad that you didn't come to the arena today with Word Lens because...
right.
Because we know where that probably would have went.
Something's wrong. It worked much better on my iPad.
This is going to look like a conspiracy. Like, oh, the host don't want Chad on there anymore.
No, we've been talking about it. I love that Chad is doing these reviews personally just because I think the arena is all about app discovery.
Exactly.
And if we're all bringing cool apps to the table, that's more apps for you to discover through the show.
Exactly.
So I think that's great. Yes, Chad's Paper Karma wins with 48% of the votes. Everybody wants to get rid of paper spam, so that was kind of a no-brainer. Alarm Clock Ultra in second place with 32%. Bravo, Ron. Third place, Markers at 16%. Fourth place, Fancy at 4%.
So nobody likes shopping.
Well,
I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
This is not the audience for it.
Yeah. Maybe that's the case.
I know that there's a huge audience for it, just not this one.
Yeah.
I feel a little indication that the cool alarm clock got a pretty good run. That
I downloaded it. It's awesome. Yeah.
Is that cool? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So we have three new apps this week. We are excluding Chad because we don't want him to win anymore.
No, we're kidding.
The app that he was going to do was Word Lens, and he opted out at the last minute.
We should have let it in.
I know, totally. Why didn't we let that happen?
Just show it anyways.
Listen, man, anybody can win an arena, but you haven't lived until you've really failed an arena.
That's true. You don't know what it's...
Either a demo fail or one that you're convinced everyone will like and no one votes for.
Yeah. Totally. All right, so the first app that we'd like to feature is the one that you're showing off,
Eileen. Speaking of failing, I failed last week. No, I'm kidding.
It's okay.
I don't really care. But I do have a really cool app to share. I actually found this on Lifehacker.
You do have a really cool app to share.
And
it was also going to be mine, and
I know,
then I saw that you already had it.
I put it in the dock before Jason got to it. That's the first time that's happened, like a year and a half.
Yeah.
He pinged me this afternoon and said, oh, you took my app. And I look to see if anybody's in, like, oh, I better hurry up and get mine in there, just in case someone might steal my app.
First come, first serve, pretty much.
So it's already Jason Howell certified because he wanted it. So, hey. My app is called One Tap Quick Bar, and there is various versions of it available, various prices, but you can get it for free. Essentially what it is, it's a notification customizer for Android, and I'll show you what it looks like on my Nexus 7 here, and I'll do the drop down of notifications, and you can see I have two bars up here besides notifications, and essentially these bars will launch whatever I want. I have actually added Evernote. It's a button to launch Evernote quickly. I've also added a button to launch Pocket Casts quickly. Unfortunately, that has stopped. I've added a button to see my battery display quickly. I'm very obsessed with battery life on all my devices, so that's a quick and easy way to find it without having to go into settings and then go find battery. It just quickly launches that. What else have I done? And you can actually customize it now. I have two bars on my notification. I have two one-tap quick bars on here. That's going to cost you 99 cents. You can get for free the one bar up there, and you can customize it to whatever you want. So brightness settings, you can kind of like automatically do that. Now, I understand that you can actually do that too with, you know, you can add a button here, turn on Wi-Fi, turn on various things that you might actually already see on various widgets available. But it's just another option. And I, you know, it's also instead of just swiping over left or right to get to that widget, just doing that and then tapping on the button to turn on Wi-Fi or whatever. It's kind of it's also just one tap. Kind of swipe down and then do whatever you want there. So I will show you how to actually do that on here on my phone. I haven't actually installed any notification bar on my phone. So essentially what you do is you tap one tap quick once you, now I just have the free version on here, and you create new. And then you have your list of items that you can do. So like turning on Wi-Fi. Let's see here. Let's see. Let's do brightness. Maybe, or let's see, what kind of applications do I want? Maybe I want to launch Dropbox quicker. I don't know. I'm just picking some stuff. And contacts, you can actually put contacts on there. I'm not going to do that, but you can quickly email or call some contacts. I'm not going to do that because it's going to show the person's information up here, and I don't want to do that for all of you. I don't want to give away phone numbers or emails, personal emails. So what else? Let's see here. What else may I want to do? Or maybe I want to launch my favorite game. Gyro. God, I pause when I say that name because I'm like, oh,
my favorite game.
Know.
Dun dun dun.
Gyro. So there essentially I have four. You can have up to six items on your notification toggle bar there. And then you have the option for design. So do I want to keep this green bar? Do I want to make it black? Do I want to do the wood straight black? And then you could do, the colors for the icons. Do I want it to be white? Or blue or red? Do I want the text color to change? I could change the text color if I want. I'm going to keep it white. And then you can have a little status icon on your notification bar as well. Let's give it green. You don't have to. You can just keep it transparent if you want. Hit the check mark on the top right-hand corner. And then on the bottom, once you're satisfied, hit apply. And let's see, the more button, what does it do? Oh, you can upgrade, gives you some more, you can reverse the order that you have your bar. But essentially, I've hit apply, right. And there it is on my notification bar. I'm going to get out of the app, pull drop down, and there you go. Those were the four buttons that I wanted to do right off the top of the bat. Very easy and free. And you can have multiple bars. I kind of thought about, I almost bought like getting unlimited bars for, I think it was $2.49 or something like that to get the unlimited. But then I thought, how many bars do I really need?
Yeah, I know. After a while, it just gets crowded.
It gets a little crowded. So if you look, Chad, if you tap on the app screenshots, you can see how crazy it could get with multiple bars, notification bars. If we go to the picture, and then you could see like the various white.
Yeah,
and
why would
it just gets a little crazy. I don't think I need that much. I think one is plenty, actually.
I totally agree.
I went ahead and bought the second one just to see what it would look like and to play it around and to show you on there.
Yeah.
But yeah, essentially you can clean it up and you don't have to have anything on your home screen. Sparkling Cyanide has written that in our chat room. But I thought it was a really handy tool and another way to get quickly into some your apps or favorite settings and for free.
Yeah. I was going to say, it's
almost like there's the Power Bar widget, which I live by, this stock Android Power Bar, a customizable version of that.
Exactly.
Yeah. What was interesting to me about this is if you're flashing a lot of ROMs on rooted devices, a lot of times these are in there by default. You end up with, and actually, Chad, if you can take mine, you end up with a top notification bar in your notification screen that is very, very much the same as your power control, your Wi-Fi, your display. I happen to have a display timeout on here in airplane mode. But you get those on a lot of ROMs. And that was one of the reasons that I liked this so much is it, I love any app that kind of brings some of that kind of ROM customization capability to unrooted devices for people that haven't experienced that. See that a lot. It's very handy to have that on the pull down. Of course, on like Samsung overlays and stuff, they include that there too, right? So this is one way to get it if you don't already have it. But very customizable. I love that app.
That's fantastic. The number one tap. Quick Bar.
That's right. Free for one bar. All right. I am also doing an app that starts with one, but it's not the number one. It's spelt out. I mean, it's the number one, but it's spelt out. It's does that make sense? I hope it does. It's called One More Clock Widget. Yes, One More Clock Widget. Probably named that because there are a lot of clock widgets out there. This is a clock widget that it's free. There's a free version that has a limited number of widgets installed by default. And then there's a pay version for 99 cents that brings a total of 60 plus clock widgets. Now, this is just kind of a way, and I've been using this for a while, particularly on my tablets, on my Galaxy Tab 10.1 at home. I have one of these widgets on there, and I've had it for a while, and I really like it. And I think, actually, if you take my screen, it's this one right here. I think I had it in one of my reviews, and there were a few comments on YouTube that were like, what was that clock thing? Where can I find that? It's One More Clock Widget. These are just a few of the different widgets that you can add. It's a pretty straightforward widget app. I'll go ahead and let's see here. Well, I already have them created. You create it as a widget, obviously. But if I touch it, touch one of the clocks, it'll take me to the settings, and then I can go into the themes. And I've downloaded the full collection because I have the full version of it. But I mean, there's just a ton of these clock widgets and different layouts of these clocks that you can integrate in. It also works with Widget Locker, so if you want to put kind of a cool looking clock on your lock screen integrated with Widget Locker, you can do that. But it's pretty easy to use. You just kind of select, and it looks like it has a pretty good kind of like community built around creating more options that you'll see through here. But I'll just go ahead and select that. You can actually personalize the clock, so you can totally customize the layout of everything and, the order of them, visibility, all that kind of stuff. I can make that, disappear if I want to, or reappear, move them around if I want to. It's a little bit slow, but if I wanted to reposition this, if you wanted to customize it, in other words, you're fully able to do that. You can change the colors, all that kind of stuff. You can also assign an app or an action to happen when you touch the clock. Specifically, there are all of these different parts of the widget that you can assign different tasks. So if you got really nerdy with this, you could assign up to 9 different actions based on where on the widget you're clicking. That's maybe a little overkill for me, but it is definitely handy. I can't install that one app that we've also reviewed that also starts with the one called One Weather. You remember that one?
Oh, yeah.
A really good...
It's
either the device or Jelly Bean, but right now it's not supported. But on my Galaxy Tab at home, that's what I do. I have set the tap to launch to One Weather so that when I click on the weather app or the weather widget, it takes me to One Weather and I get the full kind of weather rundown there. But anyways, it's just kind of a really easy to use, customizable clock kind of widget add for your device, and just has a lot of nice looking widgets. Want to feature it on here. 99 cents gets you access to quite a few of these. And let's see here, and Jelly Bean, obviously, if I move this around.
Cool.
Resizes and all that stuff. Cool.
That's so cool.
Ron loves clocks. As we know, he loves clocks.
Yeah, this is for you, Ron.
It's a cool, this cool clock. Widget.
Yeah, there we go. And... well, whatever. I'm running out of space there, apparently. But anyways, it's called One More Clock Widget, and there's a free version as well as a 99-cent version. Check it out. That is it. All right, cool. Ron, your turn.
Yeah, so I had another app all lined up. I had my whole spiel done and stuff like that, and then literally last night I threw it all out, and I said I'm going to go with this app that I just found last night.
Oh, yeah.
If you're a longtime All About Android watcher or listener, you're aware of the fact that I had an app giving me a phantom notification, right?
Yep.
And what it was just blinking a light, and I didn't know what was causing it. I didn't know what. I hadn't gotten Jelly Bean yet, and so I wasn't able to use Jelly Bean's advanced notification management within the app section. Since then, I have gotten Jelly Bean, and I can use that. But I realized many, many, many of you don't have Jelly Bean and probably won't as we look at the rollout, how long it takes these things to roll out, and realize that maybe some of you might have the same problem I have. And even though I solved my problem Actually, I was at my friend's house last night, and she has the Sony Tablet S that has a big old green LED light on the edge of it. And she's like, I don't know why it's blinking. I don't know how to turn it off. It was the same problem. Mm. I said, all right, there's got to be a solution for this. So I did a quick search, some message boards, found some people talking about it, and came up with, and this is, it's been downloaded over a million times. This might be old news, but it was new to me. LightFlow Light. And that's the free version. There is a paid version for $299. And basically what this allows you to do is allows you to take total control over your notifications. Every aspect of the notifications, whether it's the blinking light on the phone, the LED light on the various spots on your phone, depending on your handset, the sounds, vibrating, notification pane, all that stuff. It basically can almost override the app's main settings and let you take more control over it. So when you open it up, it's a very simple app, you know, well designed, you know, straight out of the gate. You do need to turn accessibility on. Okay. That's one thing. So some people, you know, kind of in terms of security concern, you just basically have to allow it to say, allow this app to control other apps. So just be aware of that. So all you do is tap on that. Then you just say yes up top. Yeah. So there you go. And once you do that, then basically you're giving LightFlow Light the ability to kind of take control over the notifications of yours. So if you tap the icon and go into the settings, what I found really interesting is that it – I'm sorry, not settings. Go back one. Go to notifications. What it does is it's a very easy to tell.
Oh, yeah.
And what it's doing is it's organizing the apps by the color of the LED that it's using. So, for example, with LightFlow Light, when you miss a call, it's going to blink the red LED. But if you tap on that, tap on missed call there, it pulls in, and this is where you can control it. So here you can control the notification. So you can either enable the notification or turn it off completely. You can add the pull-down notification bar. You can enable a pop-up, so you can display a pop-up notification. Some people might want that for text messages. That's a possible one. If you click on light on the top nav, that moves over to the controlling of the LED light, so you can enable it or disable it. If you enable it, you can change the color of the light, and you can change what light that blinks at the bottom of it, so that's pretty cool. You can change the duration and the flashing rate. Like it's one of these total apps that gives you so much control over what you can do. If you swipe over to the right or click sounds, that will take you to the sound section. You can enable or disable sound.
No,
you can say whether you want the sound to be when you're on a call or not on a call. Like, for example, when I'm on a call and someone else is calling me, it keeps on beeping and beeping. I hate that, so I turned it off.
Oh, I hate that.
Right? Yeah. So you can use this to turn it off, right? So it really allows you to customize every app and how it notifies you to your preferences. You can enable repeating sounds, which I don't know why you'd want to do that. And then you can also slide over and you can control the vibration. You can change the vibration pattern, whether it vibrates in the call, when the screen is on. It's fascinating. It's totally fascinating.
Custom vibration. So what if I do that? What happens?
I don't know. I haven't done that yet.
Can I make it go bump, 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 bump instead of maybe. Bump, 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 bump,
bump, bump, bump, bump, bump, bump, bump.
So click a custom vibration.
I just did. And then,
look at that. You totally can. You enter a list of timings in milliseconds.
Ah, that's pretty awesome.
Bump, 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 bump. How do I do that?
Yeah, you need a translation app
Can I translate that? Okay.
That's pretty cool.
So if you back out to the whole list of apps that are controllable, you can see, you know, in here there's a lot of stock kind of main Android functionality, like whether Bluetooth is on or whether the battery's charged or the battery's charging. But then you also see other apps kind of sneaking in there. You know, Gmail is in there, and the culprit to my phantom problem was Yahoo Mail is in there. A lot of the mail, pretty much anything that you think might notify you is in there. But let's say there's an app in there that you want to include, that you want to have a notification for. Okay. If you back out to the main menu and go to more apps, that's where you can access all of the apps that are supported. And this gets a little more kind of hardcore because it's this is basically a list of all the apps that are supported for full functionality of LightFlow, and these are basically links to go into the Google Play Store to go download them.
I was about to say I don't have half these apps, or I've never downloaded half of this. Okay.
there's a limit to what they do support or don't support. So you want to keep that in mind, that it doesn't give you 100% control. For whatever reason, they work with some apps, they'll work with other apps. But pretty much I flipped through the list, and pretty much nearly everything that I want was in there. What's also interesting is that you can, if you want to, I'm just trying to go through one where I can actually demo it. But if you wanted to add a person, so go to
like a contact.
Yep, go to notification.
Wait, am I going to show someone's contact information though? These are.
Oh, I don't think so. I don't believe.
Okay, so go up here.
So go up here and add a person. And you just choose the name.
Wait, it's this. I went to FAQ. What happened here? So.
And, no, go to notifications.
Oh, notifications. I see.
Hit add person.
Okay. Are you sure?
Just names, right?
I think so. Okay, Aaron, you're in. Aaron Newcomb, frequent guest. Okay, there we go.
Tap on Aaron's name.
Tap on Aaron's name. It
will show you SMS, MMS, or missed call. So if you want to have a unique notification for when Aaron texts you or calls you, you can do that.
Don't even know if he has my number, but there we go. Enable notification.
That's cool, right? So yeah. It's basically treating people like apps. So.
Oh, that's
great. We are now apps, Jason. Handy.
Yes.
We are now apps.
About okay. time.
There's a bunch of functionality in here. There's a lot of control over the device's volume. A lot of the audio, you can adjust the volume for alarms versus in-call versus you when you're using music. You know, those other layers of volume that we used to have control over in Android, and now it's just like one volume. It's just another one of those apps that lets you customize it to your heart's content. And it was funny because when I was installing this on the tablet that had the LED problem, my friend was asking me, she's like, why can't you just control it on the app level? I'm like, well, you can, but with Android, you can create an application that allows you to manage just notifications across all the apps. And so like, it's kind of interesting how you can have an app. It's almost like if you have an app has a whole bunch of different functionality and one of them is notifications, but this app allows you to reach all the notifications across all of your apps.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, so I don't know. It's free. It allowed me to turn off the damn light that was blinking. So that works for me.
Do you know what the difference is between the free and the $299 version? What is the...
There's a $299 version, yeah.
That's a good question. I actually didn't...
Or $249, sorry.
Oh, $249, sorry. 50 cents less.
Sorry, I just saw it in the doc. Sorry to throw you off there. But, I mean, you've been using the free version, and you've not been limited, like
there's
so...
There's tons of capabilities on the free version. Aaron,
that's pretty cool. I love that, having that kind of control, especially that kind of granular control over things. It looks like the full version, yeah, activates a number of things. If you go to their site at folioflow.com, they have kind of a side-by-side. Oh, you know what? It enables more apps.
That's probably
the full version enables more apps, it looks like. So if yours isn't in there, you can probably find it there too.
It also says the free version takes approximately 12 flashes or 20 seconds to change color, while the paid version can change pretty much every 2.5 seconds.
Okay.
Well, there you go. You get what you pay for.
Exactly.
Immediate color change or not?
Will it really matter that much?
The difference between the two. Maybe for some people.
No, absolutely. Hey, people that want that kind of granular control, it definitely matters to them. So that is great. That is Light Flow. Light. So today's apps that we've covered, One Tap Quick Bar, One More Clock Widget, and Light Flow Light. You can vote for your favorite app this week if you go to bit.ly/69AAA poll. bit.ly/69AAA poll. There we go. Sorry. Cold medicine attacking me again. And you can let us know which is your favorite of the apps that we've talked about this week. Great apps. Great show all around.
That's our title, Attack of the Cold Medicine.
Attack of the... Great.
Mine wore off about halfway through that review, so I apologize.
Not enough cold medicine.
You were left stranded out on the island alone.
Oh, apps are people too. That's a good one, Splinter.
Yeah. Cool. Well, I think that is it for this week. This was a fantastic episode. Let's start, I guess. Well, Ron, go ahead and plug away. What you got?
Sure. Yeah, just go to about.me/RonXO, and there you can find all the links about me, Twitter, Google+, Facebook, all the fun stuff. Go check out Graphically and iFanboy, my day jobs. And I'm actually going to be off next week, so I won't be on the show next week. So I will miss you guys very much.
Mm. We'll miss you too.
Yeah, summer vacations, things like that. Yeah. I'm sorry.
I understand. Everybody needs a vacation, even you, Ron. Although I'm very upset. Just kidding.
It's like the teacher says, I'm upset that you won't be here next week.
It's actually okay. Michael Ludden, if you remember, he was with HTC. He's now with Samsung. And he's going to be joining us next week, filling your shoes or attempting to fill your shoes, Ron, while you're gone. So,
All right. I said good luck with that.
Yeah, it'll be a challenge, but I think he's up to the challenge. Go ahead and plug Eileen.
We don't have any breaking news today, right, Chad?
No,
nothing at all.
Nothing maybe? Yet. Do we?
I don't know.
Do we need to?
No. Maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're breaking news happy.
I just like to break some news.
Breaking news.
Breaking news. Eileen. You can find me at about.me/EileenRose.
I did not know that about you. That is breaking news.
Wow.
You can find me at about.me/JasonHowell or on Twitter @JasonHowell. That's it for this week. Send us a voicemail, or leave us a voicemail rather, 347-SHOW-AAA. You can leave us an email or video mail by emailing us the link at AAA@twit.tv. You can find the show on Twitter. We are @AndroidShow. You can always find show notes for all of our episodes at twit.tv/AAA. Everything we talked about today is going to be included in the show notes along with the posting of the MP3, so check for it. Past episodes can always be found on our site. We don't talk about that enough, as well as on iTunes, YouTube. You can find us all over the place. And you can catch us live every Tuesday starting at 5 p.m. Pacific at live.twit.tv. Thank you so much for joining us today. We will see you on another episode of All About Android.
I don't know why I'm doing this. I just am.